Okay, yours too, since I'm right here. Thank you. Anything else?
Nope. Mike and Laura, are you seeing the PowerPoint screen? Okay.
I think we've, in the past couple of these, have allowed a minute or so. And Christy, if you can let me know when it looks like the enrollees are dropping off and we should begin.
All right, I've started the recording. I think you guys can get started whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you. Thank you all for joining us. For those that I haven't yet formally met, I am Mike Bohr and I serve as the Director of the University Police and Safety Office and have been coordinating a few different groups on campus that meet and have been working through all the different situations and scenarios that have presented themselves as the COVID-19 pandemic has progressed. I have a number of people that are joining me today, and we should be considered co-equals in this presentation because each of us is carrying kind of our own content related to testing and how we're providing support to the community when a person is determined to be positive. I have Laura Osterholland here, and she is the Vice Provost of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management. The Dean of Students, Casey Peterson, is also joining us, as well as the Director of the Student Health Service, Patty Dirk. And unfortunately, she will not be able to be with us for the whole session, so Kim Larson will be pinch hitting for her as this progresses. Before we begin, I'm going to give an opportunity for Laura to just introduce her side of the house, because those others are all in her area. So Laura, if you have a few comments to say.
Oh, thanks. Casey Peterson, Dean of Students, will be taking on a good portion of the presentation, as well as Patty Dirk, Director of Student Health Service. And when, as Mike said, we're pleased to be with you today. One thing I do want to do is publicly thank Patty and Kim. The Student Health Service has been really on the front lines of this since March, testing students, preparing, figuring out the best healthcare protocols. And so I think you'll see today some of the fruits of that labor and how we are really positioned to help our students.
Thank you. So what we're here to talk about today is related to testing. And Casey, if you could advance that, I would appreciate it. Nope, go back one. So these are the topics that we'll be covering. I'm going to start off by describing the university system's statewide testing that they have arranged. We are working in conjunction with them for a number of locations in the city of Fargo. And I'll go through some of the details on that, as well as the outstate events. We'll also talk about reporting to NDSU. How do we become aware should a person or a member of our community test positive? And that's happening a number of different ways. We'll be talking about a new effort that we'll be rolling out very shortly here, I'm thinking sometime early next week, that will involve the ability for people to also self-report. But for those instances that where we've had members of our community that are actually on campus, the Department of Health has been following different protocols, and a recent change through some agreements has allowed for their ability to share additional information with us. And so we're hoping to be able to be providing pretty good and accurate details to the campus community as the fall progresses. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in terms of how we would be notifying with a new site that should be going live here very soon. I do wanna make sure that people understand as we talk through this, that the contact tracing process whereby positive individuals are interviewed and people that are close contacts to them, all of that is being handled by the North Dakota Department of Health and the public health officials that they have working with them. We will assist the Department of Health, of course, in providing information that makes their work more efficient and allows them to make contact with those close contact individuals. But the North Dakota Department of Health does oversee it. We'll talk about how the testing for students is functioning within the Student Health Service. And then we'll also talk about some guidance that's in the last final edits here in terms of what do students or what do employees do if they have a person that, you know, they're living with that might be positive. There's a whole many different scenarios that present themselves, as we've found in working with this through the spring and summer. And we just have coalesced those resources together in some guidance that will also be available. So first up, the North Dakota University System, in conjunction with the North Dakota Department of Health, the governor's office, and all the individual institutions are partnering to try and have a mass testing event that in theory is going to catch people on the front end should they be asymptomatic and would be somebody who could spread the disease unbeknownst to them or the others that are around them. So the details of this program are being updated daily. The most recent information is available out on the university systems site at the link that's on the screen now at the ndus.edu/get-tested. That has details on the program as well as the locations that are present in the state. So questions that we've fielded is why in the world would you want to do mass testing? Isn't that a waste of resources? What we're finding is that up to 40% of people who are infectious wouldn't necessarily have any symptoms that would make them aware that they could be sick. And so that is a situation ripe for infectious transmission. for those asymptomatic people. And so this testing is really designed to try and capture those individuals. And ideally they would be doing this testing, you know, approximately 5 days before they'd be traveling to Fargo. And that's one of the reasons that there are many locations across the state so that they can test in what would be their home location. With full realization that many are already in Fargo, and we'll talk about those Fargo testing events in just a little bit here. But what we are encouraging all of our community to do, that be the students and employees, is to get tested as the fall semester approaches, again, ideally about 5 days before. And that's so that we have, again, the ability to try and catch those asymptomatic people that are infectious. Another thing that I should point out is that, you know, not all states are able to do this. North Dakota does have the resources as the North Dakota Governor's Office and the North Dakota Department of Health. And I think I missed them when I was talking about our partner organizations. Obviously, they're a key player in this. The Department of Health has the adequate resources to be able to do that testing. And so we're leveraging that from university system standpoint on providing testing available to all North Dakota institutions. Any North Dakota student, even if they're out of state, can go to any one of the locations within the state of North Dakota to get tested, and it'd be thought that they would go to their closest location. And again, the details on the locations are at that link. For out-of-state students, obviously, if there's a large amount of mileage that they'd have to travel here, it's unlikely that they would. And so the Fargo testing events are actually stacked just prior to the week of classes starting. So Casey, if you could advance, I would appreciate it. So for the Fargo testing locations, in recent meetings that I've had with Fargo Cass Public Health and North Dakota Department of Health officials, as well as the National Guard, we're looking at using the location of the RF lot, which is the east-west facing parking lot that is just south of the shack. And we're going to have both drive-up and drive-through or walk-up events will be available. And the times for all of these days at this point are intended to be 10 o'clock in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. And they will be running consecutive days, Tuesday through Sunday, the week before classes start. Next slide, please. For the walk-up lanes, like I said, they will be available. We would be asking that you wear face coverings or masks as directed recently with our face covering change, and you're encouraged also to the extent possible to, you know, maintain those 6 foot distancing when you're walking up in those lines. We anticipate that the smoothest flow of traffic, although it might be cumbersome for some, would be to enter from University Drive. All traffic should enter from University Drive, and the 16th Avenue lane was thought when the guard was reviewing this to provide sufficient capacity to queue up the vehicles that are waiting to get into the parking lot. I would ask that individuals stay away from the intersection of 15th Avenue and 14th Street, as a number of these days will also be move-in days, and that intersection is often problematic with traffic flow. So that's the reason we're pushing to have our vehicle traffic enter from University Drive. Also, anybody who's going in for this testing is strongly encouraged, in fact, I would almost say required, to pre-register. And the reason for that, if you don't pre-register before you go to the testing site while you're in line, you'll be using that registration mechanism as well. It just makes for a more efficient process. The other thing that we've run into, which has caused some issues, is that NDESU affiliated people that are being tested are not using their local address. And that causes a problem when positive cases are revealed, because the initial contact would go out to whatever health agency would oversee the address that the student or the employee uses. So we would ask that you use your local address for the Fargo-Moorhead area. There, as I mentioned, there's additional testing available for our students. And I think I would ask that our student health service employees that are joining us on the call kind of go through the process that they have in place there.
Okay, thank you, Mike. So as Laura mentioned, Student Health Service has been testing since March when this all kind of began. And we test, so unlike the mass testing, so the mass testing is for people who are asymptomatic, whereas when a student tests in Student Health Service, they would be symptomatic or they would have been identified by the a public health official that they have been in close contact. So the public health official would advise the student that they've been in that close contact and should be tested. We would have them call Student Health Service so that we can get some information from them and then really ensure that it's been that 7 to 10 days since the contact, because there's a high probability of testing a false negative if we test them too soon. So they could get tested and then become sick and would have already have had the test and might think that they are not. So that's the reason for that. We also have a process in place so that we can test international students, which is different. They do not have to be symptomatic or been contacted by a public health official. We're doing that so that they don't need to quarantine for 14 days and can get tested and then get organized and get ready for classes to start on the 24th. So that's kind of the process. We have providers, nursing staff that do the testing here in the Student Health Service. We work with the health department. And so the tests are picked up every day at 3 o'clock. So we try to get all of our testing done prior to 3, but otherwise we can hold it to the next day and it'll go out. Our average has been 2 to 5 days, typically more around the 2-day mark until we get results back. It just depends on if there's been a mass testing that might make the results a little bit longer to come in. And there is no charge. The health department is covering, the Student Health Service covers the cost for the collection and that kind of thing, and then are for the process. And then the health department covers the cost for the testing. So there's no charge to students at this time. That is always subject to change if the health department changes something. And then there's employee resources for testing. Mike went over the mass testing areas or the dates and that kind of thing. So there will be other resources for employees. So employees can always reach out to their primary care provider if they have questions regarding any kind of COVID symptoms. There are the static or the drive-through testing sites that Sanford and Essentia has. And there's a nurse line. So if you go to their website, it's super easy to find. There's the site that you contact and you can either fill out an online form or call their nurse call line. And then they get people scheduled. But at this point, they still follow the same criteria that we are, where you would be symptomatic or have been contacted by a public health official. And I believe those are the two areas. Public health also does testing as well. So Family Healthcare Center downtown does testing. I don't know if that would be for all employees or if it's on a sliding fee scale. So there are several sites. So always there's always options available. I think that was all there. Casey, if you want to go to the next slide. Okay. And then students and employees are expected to report to NDSU. So there will be information coming out shortly and a report form that students and employees and faculty can all report on. And so if they've tested positive for COVID, we really want that form completed. It's a voluntary form, but we would like that completed so that we can have that snapshot of how many positive cases we have on campus at that time. So that's the purpose of that. We in Student Health Service, when we test a student, we just complete that form so a student doesn't need to self-identify or fill out the form if they've came to Student Health Service for the testing. And then also if somebody's been notified by that state health department official that they've been in close contact, we would ask that they complete the form as well. And Kim, jump in anytime if I'm missing anything. So the primary reason is to really assist. Mike had mentioned that we are partnering with the North Dakota Health Department for contact tracing. They do all the contact tracing, but we try to assist them. So if we know of additional information and we can quickly get that to them, that just helps us to make sure that the appropriate people are being contacted in a timely manner. And then to provide that support and resources to students. So to student, staff, and faculty. We really wanna be a source, a resource. And I think Casey's gonna talk a little bit more about that to provide that support so that everybody knows what resources are available, who and how to reach out. I'm going to turn it over to Casey now because I think he was going to add a little bit here.
Yeah, we just, I think the only thing I would add is that we do have the reporting form about ready and the process, and that'll be rolling out, like Mike said, early next week. And we're really just looking to make sure that students have the support that they need ongoing after that initial report as well. So that's where our office will come into to play.
I think there's a question about what kind of testing Student Health does or what is done typically. And we've had calls from students, I'm just gonna back up a little bit here, whether we're doing the nasal or the throat or the oral swab, it depends on what's available. So the health department has assured us that they're both just as accurate. It depends on where they're at with analyzers and what they have available. So if I don't know how the mass testing goes, Mike, if you know that, if they do all nasal or not, but in Student Health Service, we might have one student that has an oral swab and one that has a nasal. I think people prefer oral, but we have to use what's available to us. So it might be a surprise when you come.
From what I have seen on the mass testing events is that they are oral swabs. I will have additional information provided in a meeting this afternoon, and I'll ask that question just to confirm that's the case. And the other thing, I noticed a question on if you have to go on a certain date. We're not setting aside dates for like alphabets of last names or anything like that. Thought to be a little complicated because of the fact that not everybody's going to be in Fargo. So we're basically just spreading it out on a number of different days. But I would encourage those that are in the local area to utilize the first couple days because of the fact that we will have a sizable student population returning as they move in starting on Thursday. So Tuesday and Wednesday, probably ideal spots for those that are local to the city of Fargo. In terms of notifying campus, one of the things that we've been struggling with is whether or not we're hearing of cases that are positive. I think that there have been a number of instances where we're not necessarily hearing that. As I mentioned, there's recent agreements that have been made where the North Dakota Department of Health is going to be more reliably sharing some information with us. And so we're intending to use that along with the self-reports in order to provide a mechanism whereby we can let the campus know what the approximation of what the level of activity is for the NDSU community. And I should say again that in terms of contact tracing, the North Dakota Department of Health is the authority that's handling that. They're doing all the data collection. They're doing the contact tracing, the interviewing of the positive people. They're reporting the official numbers. But I should also mention that we've got a number of people in our community that have been assisting the Department of Health through working with them through, you know, arrangements that have made and have been trained up on being contact tracers. So we're helping them, but it's all being overseen by the Department of Health, who has the actual data sets, and we're using the states. For those people that are working with public health, they're using the state's databases and systems, and so it's all one integrated system. Student Health Service is going forward kind of going to be the reporting location through which information will flow, and by doing that we're hoping we're going to be capturing most if not all of the information as it's released to us by the North Dakota Department of Health, and also some that new self-reporting system. When you see that new self-reporting system, be aware that there's be two processes, one for students, one for employees. And those initially will go to either Student Health for students or the Human Resources for the employee side, so we can make sure we get resources and information back out to the two different populations. But then our Human Resources group will be forwarding the numbers of individuals that are employees so that we can get an accurate count. And what I'm when I'm talking about our you know, publishing back out data, what we're looking to do when we gather that information is report the number of confirmed positive cases that were reported to us in the past couple of weeks. And we're setting that time frame on a rolling basis because it's our understanding through review of the data that predominantly, unless a person is seriously ill and wouldn't be on our campus community at that point anyway, unless they're seriously ill, they are seeming to recover within that time frame. So what the number reporting is going to be is an approximation of the number of active cases in our community. We will continue to evaluate if that's the right approach, but it goes back to one of the problems that we have because we don't have or oversee the data on this is the trouble that we would have on knowing when somebody is no longer in isolation or is no longer ill. And because of that, if we were to try to present total positive cases and just have that number, that number would continue to go up and eventually would be an inaccurate indication of what the level of current activity is. And so we're hoping that the process that we're using is transparent and also as accurate as it can be based on the reports that come to us. We fully realize that we're not going to hear about all of the active cases, and so I want to be upfront on that as well. We're going to do our best to make sure we're publishing as good of information as we have. I should talk about the contact tracing process a little bit more. As I mentioned, the North Dakota Department of Health is responsible, and we're assisting that in a number of ways. As I mentioned, we've got people in our community that are actually serving as contact tracers, but we've also been kind of brainstorming on how we go about determining close contacts in some of our different venues. Obviously, one of the major ones is a classroom. For large classes, the last thing we would want to have happen is for the whole room to be considered to be a close contact, which the health department is using as they're doing the contact tracing, the definition of a person within 6 feet of a positive testing individual for 15 minutes or more. And so if you think about some of our large classrooms, that's a fairly small subset of class population. And so we want to make sure that to the extent possible, we're, you know, identifying and bringing into quarantine those people who are truly close contacts from our class settings. To do that is identified on here. There's class rosters and seating charts. I believe that there have been some sessions that this has been discussed previously. I know that the registrar's office is working on finalizing some of these details. So, and I think he has an upcoming session as well where some of those details may be further fleshed out.
Mike, could I interrupt briefly?
Yes.
There's been a couple questions here about the threshold for a classroom outbreak or I guess in any outbreak. And I know that's not an easy or quick answer, but could you address how we would be just working in collaboration with public health on that?
Yes, as I mentioned, the Department of Health has the data sets and knows affiliations of people that have tested positive and would be able to look at that data and, you know, share from an aggregate standpoint what our level of outbreak would be in, should that occur on our campus. We would work in close conjunction with them to discuss what are our best options in terms of adjusting anything that we would need to do in terms of trying to address any outbreak situation that could present itself. And of course, key in all of this is how we've been outfitting and upgrading the classroom technology to allow for instruction to continue to the extent possible should we start seeing some of those types of issues crop up. I think that was the question being asked. I think there was also a question on threshold levels within classes, and I think you could look at that again using the HyFlex model in terms of trying to the best extent possible to continue that instructional process for the classes. This slide is up here because there's kind of been some terms that have been used interchangeably, and I want to make sure that we're clear on the terminology being used when we're describing what happens in this whole testing scheme. So quarantine is a term that's used to describe how we're trying to separate people from the general population if there's a thought that they might have the disease. And so if a person is considered to be a close contact, they would be in quarantine. If a person is living with somebody who has the disease, they would be in quarantine at that point. If they are symptomatic and are being tested for those symptoms, they would also be in quarantine until the results are known. And we've got different campus processes for each of the quarantine and the isolation. But before I get to those, I'll also define what isolation is. And that's what comes into play if a person actually does test positive for the disease. And so quarantine is not positive, but there's a possibility that you were exposed. Isolation is if you actually present positive. So on the campus, what we're doing is for those that are in quarantine, and this is specific to the residence halls as well as the apartments, but also applies to off-campus housing as well for the private housing. Our quarantine is set up so that the people are quarantining in the same residence as they live in. We will be getting resources to them to assist with that, and I think Casey's going to talk a little bit about that in a future slide, in terms of getting meals and that sort of thing to them so that they're able to you know, safely quarantine in their spaces. And again, this applies to people who are symptomatic awaiting test results, as well as people who are close contacts to somebody who is positive. If a person who is in quarantine in one of our res halls tests positive, they will then move into what the isolation state. And what we're doing for them in that case is moving them to a residence hall floors that have been set aside for this potential. And I believe the first one that will be utilized will be the North Wyville area. And so the student that tests positive would be moved over there. And again, resources would continue to be provided to them in terms of dining and daily check-ins with them to see how they're doing, just to make sure that they're doing all right. And should, you know, their symptoms be progressing, we can certainly get them the help that they need while they're isolating. The typical quarantine period is 14 days since last possible exposure. And the typical isolation guidance is a period of 10 days and 24 hours fever-free. That time frame has recently changed in the last couple of weeks. It used to be 72 hours fever-free, but it is now 24 hours. And also symptoms improving. So all that has to be in play before someone would be able to come out of isolation. There are some locations on campus because of how they're set up where they can actually isolate in their own space. If they have like a private room with restroom facilities, they would be able to isolate where they actually were residing. And I think that's still the intention, to continue to allow them to do that. But again, the dining and that sort of thing would be arranged so that the students have access to those resources.
Okay, so what to expect for students. So there's kind of two different tracks here. If a student is tested in Student Health Service, they will be contacted by a Student Health Service provider. So an NDSU provider would be calling to let students know if they were positive. And then it would also go on their patient portal. So they would get a notification. So if you get a call, that means it's positive and would hopefully be notified sooner than if it's negative. Negative test results take a bit longer. They try to get the positive ones out more quickly. If a student was tested off campus, then they're contacted by whatever facility they were screened at. So depending, like if they went to like a Sanford or Essentia or the Department of Health would be contacting them. So either way, if they're positive, they'll be contacted by a provider, and then they'll also be contacted by the North Dakota Department of Health and a contact tracer. So the contact tracer will then visit with the student and talk about who they've been in close contact with and go through all of those parameters. We will have some of that information from if somebody self-reports, so they'll hopefully fill out that form. If they go off-site to get a test done, they would fill out that report that Mike and Casey were referring to. And then, so we will call the students, do a follow-up call, whether they've been tested here or not, just to check in to see how they're doing. Clinically, if they're having any kind of health concerns, we want to make sure that they're being cared for and being taken care of. And then we will also just check in to see if they need any additional resources. And I'm going to let Casey talk a little bit more about what resources and what that will look like when it's coming from the Dean of Students.
So, and I think just following up a little bit on what Mike was saying earlier too, there are systems worked out in residence life and dining to make sure that the students have the housing they need, to make sure that they're getting the food that they need, all of those pieces. We would be offering whatever other support and resources the students need. So from the Dean of Students perspective, we'd be checking in to make sure that they are having basic needs met, that they know their options for getting caught up in classes if they've been unable to attend, if they've been too sick really to even join remotely. And really just following up with any needs that they have and doing what we can to support them through that. All right, and then so for faculty, there have been some questions about whether or not you'll be notified. We will be doing at least a general notification. When a student tests positive, our office will get that information and then we'll send out a notification to that student's instructors. It does at this point need to be non-identifying. So we can't tell you exactly who that is, but just that somebody in one of your classes has tested positive. And then that's really to prepare you for a possible request from public health officials for a class roster, seating chart, those types of things. In our follow-up with students, if they are too ill to attend class remotely using the high flex pieces, then if they're just really down for the count or they're in the hospital, we would follow our normal process of doing a class absence notification out of the Dean of Students office. And then the identification of those close contacts really is the responsibility of the Department of Health. And so they'll be reaching out to you if you're considered a close contact. They would be reaching out to any other students in the class that may be considered close contacts and doing their work on that level.
That concludes the material that we had prepared. I think there are probably a number of questions that have been raised while we've been presenting this material. I'm hoping that some of it is that were asked early on, and I see Laura has been responding to a number of these have already been covered. But Christy, if you can help us identify any outstanding questions, I would appreciate it.
All right, I've got a list of them here that I think haven't quite been addressed. Do you advise that employees who continue to be remote get tested?
I'm sorry, the third, I missed a word in there that's important.
Oh, sorry. Do you advise that employees who continue to work remote get tested?
I guess that is up to themselves. If they're not going to be interacting with anybody on our campus, the real reason that we're doing the mass testing event at the front end of this is to see whether or not we can put things in place to, you know, stem any infectious outbreak. So that would be a personal decision, I would say.
Another question, just clarifying if masks are required in common spaces, not just classrooms.
Yes, that's part of the recent direction that was given. And I think there might actually be a session later on that's going to be covering that topic in more detail.
All right. There was a question about, I think when you were talking about if a student is in class, who's notified if someone is test positive, but should all students in the class go into quarantine and the positive student go into isolation?
The positive student would go into isolation and would be given direction from the public health officials that are doing the contact tracing. In that investigation, as part of what they're looking at is where, you know, I was talking about class rosters and or seating charts. We want to identify who would be close contact to that positive. I'm talking about those that are doing the investigation. And to provide the information for those that were considered to be close within the classroom setting or wherever on campus, that they would go into quarantine, but it would not, in theory, impact the complete class roster if we have accurate information. And remember, a lot of times a person who is found to be positive, they might not even be present in the classroom. They might be doing their coursework remotely, which means that it wouldn't impact anybody in the that was physically in attendance.
Kind of a follow-up to that, if I have a positive in my class, do I have the autonomy to have all my students in the classroom go online?
I would defer that. Any class adjustments that would be made to working within your department as well as in conjunction with the provost. Again, it goes back to is the positive in the class actually were they physically present at any time when they were actually positive, and all that comes out in the investigation that's done.
Okay, a couple other ones kind of related to the contact tracing. So if there is not a seating chart, would all students be possible close contacts? And should we keep seating charts and track who is remote and who is in person?
Yes, if there isn't any better information, that's what we're trying to avoid by gathering as much detail in terms of who is physically present as possible.
Okay, in a lab class where students have to move around the room and a seating chart isn't necessarily used, would then everyone be considered a close contact?
Possibly. I think you'd have to look at each individual situation because there is a time component to the closeness of contact as well.
Okay. Should faculty or staff keep a record of who they meet with in person? Even if it's informally after class, just to keep record of who you might have been in close contact with?
You can. I guess I would encourage to the extent possible that you try and maintain your physical distance and separation from others, even if you're interacting with them. You know, if you stay more than 6 feet apart, that's ideal. There is a CARE-19 diary app that can assist in that process, and you will be hearing additional information here in the very near future about a CARE-19 alert app, which is kind of a corollary application that will be using technology in theory to determine who else might have been in close contact with you. I'm not able to go into a lot of detail on that because I don't have a lot of detail, but I've heard that will be an announcement coming in the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm.
Question, if the department chair will also be notified in addition to the instructor if there's a positive case in a classroom?
At this point, it would just be the instructors.
Okay. Go ahead, Christy.
This is a totally different question. Do you want
to? Okay. If we're going to shift topics just a little bit, I just want to make sure I'm answering a particular question correctly, Mike. There's been a couple questions and seems to be a little confusion over face coverings. And if a person is wearing, if both people are wearing a face covering, but not 6 feet apart, would they still be considered a close contact? And I think there's a difference between the way that public health contact tracers are defining that and what general guidance we're getting. Can you clarify that?
Let me try. And I'm also going to ask that Kim weigh in on this too, because I saw her head nodding up and down. What I've been told is that whether or not you're wearing a mask does not impact whether you are considered to be a close contact. Now, Kim might have some additional information beyond that. And if you could share what your understanding is, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, so actually it's the opposite. If both of the individuals have face coverings on within the, you know, and they're within 6 feet for 15 minutes, they're not considered a close contact.
That is very interesting. And like many other things in this, this continues to change because at least a couple months ago, that was not the case. So thank you for providing that updated information. That's very helpful.
Another question about if students are allowed to have off-campus visitors if they're living on campus, or are they allowed to travel off-campus?
We're not looking to restrict that in any way. So yes.
Is there a plan to have any more regular testing of students and faculty throughout the semester after this initial mass testing that we've got?
That's the goal to the extent that we're able to. Again, this would be efforts utilizing university system resources in conjunction with the Department of Health and the State Department of Health.
Is there a testing limit for each day that we have in those mass testing events?
When I've asked that question, I've been told that they have sufficient resources and have not been provided a number. Now, I do know that the state has a capacity that they're ramping up to approximately 8,000 per day, but we're not the only testing site that are in action on any of those given days. So my number that I am just ballparking is between 1,000 and 2,000 tests on any day in Fargo. And I realize that if everybody takes the test, that's not sufficient. We are encouraging everybody to take it. And the first day will be very illustrative on what capacity in terms of resources are, as well as the participation level.
Okay, there's a couple of kind of clusters of questions. So I'm gonna start with one I'm gonna let you know that they're both coming. There's a question about the threshold rate for closing classrooms again. So I think we should come back to that because there are a few clarifying questions. And then there's another one going back to the wearing masks. If you've got everyone wearing a mask, would there ever be a case where you have close contacts in a classroom then if everyone is masked?
I'm going to, before finalizing an answer on that one, check with others. Because we have the conflicting information between two of us, so.
Okay. So then the other question is, there were a few about the infection rate threshold. I know that you mentioned that this is gonna be a joint collaborative decision between the state and NDSU, but there are a couple, just want a little bit more detail about.
I guess I'd ask what the threshold to what type of change in process, and it would, you know, could we utilize the HyFlex capabilities to basically implement a change? I would anticipate that we would be doing that. Every situation is going to be unique depending on what the type of class it is, the size of the class, what room it's being held in. There's just a number of different things that come into play. And we would basically work with the provost and the deans and chairs and instructors to figure out what's the best solution. How do we adjust, should we have to, and given a level of outbreak. There's just too many variables to say we're going to, you know, make X decision at Y percent of positivity.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're asking specifically about closing all classrooms and not having face-to-face instruction. But I think, yeah, you answered that with, we're still not quite sure to be able to make that, that answer clearly right now.
That's correct.
Mike, I did some further investigating and I am going to rescind what I said. So only if an individual is in full PPE does it count as, would it not count as an exposure. So face masks do not protect them fully. So there would still be the close contact.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Hi, can people hear me?
Yep.
Mark McCourt here. I'm just chiming in because everything that's been discussed so far, I think, pertains to exposure within a classroom environment, but has anyone considered the likelihood, in fact, you know, almost certainty, that exposure is going to happen outside of the classroom environment? And so everything that, you know, all these precautions, all these contact tracing, everything that you're discussing pertains only to this one subset of the way that students are going to be interacting with each other. How are you going to deal with the extracurricular activities that students engage in?
I probably wasn't clear enough on how the contact tracing process works. They're actually doing interviews of the student that's positive to ask them who they've been around. The problem in a large class is they don't know everybody that's their classmate. It's thought that in those extracurricular activities, if they're spending a sufficient amount of time with others, they would know the names of those individuals because of the types of events they're having. Because the, you know, casual interaction, passing each other in a dining center, again, there's a time component to the closeness of contact. And so I guess that's probably why we concentrated a lot on the classrooms, because I think that presents the biggest challenge to having a student understand who they were near. Obviously, they're going to be near many others as they interact on campus, but that'd be in the residence halls where they know what rooms they, you know, they're in and are close to and what wing they're on and those types of things. And so I probably didn't do enough of an explanation of how those investigations occur to give it justice.
Yeah, and Mike, I can chime in a little bit too that we are providing some guidelines and some assistance for student groups as they're planning events and doing that. We're also recommending that they track attendance when they can so that we do have those lists where possible in case a contact tracer needs them. So we are looking at some of those other types of things to reduce the risk everywhere.
There was a question if we could clarify what fully qualifies as full PPE in that definition of if you would be considered exposed.
So full PPE would be an N95 mask, a face shield, a gown, and gloves. That's what we use at Student Health.
There was a question earlier that I missed. Do we have a single point person of contact to report cases or other issues? Or are they distributed by departments or buildings? And I don't know if I missed that when you were talking about the form that you want people to fill out.
Yes, there'll be form and a process for if the person is a student and wants to report or an employee. And I guess we're saying we're requesting that they tell us. So the student will follow one process, an employee will follow another in terms of making that report.
There was a question about how to make a seating chart paperless if you don't know all of the names on the first day. I don't know if anyone has any tips on that.
as I've thought, I've heard what people are doing for this is, and I guess I'm not sure the question on the paper list, that's a little difficult. But I thought that it would, because what we're interested in is the people who are physically present. And my understanding is that there will be paper with designed layout that people would be able to indicate where they were seated. And I guess it would be, in my mind, just the kind of thing where that information would be handed throughout the classes as the class is progressing that for, you know, that first day. And either every day or it's just an expectation that that's where you'll sit going forward.
Kind of an old school recommendation along those lines too might be when the students come in to take some time on that first day to say, please sit in the same seat each week and please make sure you know the names of the people sitting closest around you and give them some time to exchange names. And then they'll have a pretty good idea of when somebody is gone, when somebody's there, should contact tracing need to be there too.
And I believe that Margaret was going to send an email to faculty. She has something drafted, I know, to send to faculty very soon.
Mm-hmm. If a student reports a positive case to their faculty member prior to filling out the NDSU notice, so the institution doesn't learn about it before the faculty member does, what recommendations do you have for proceeding with their class on the same day?
Let's take this by step. So the student notifies at this point, I would think that the notification is by email because they are supposed to be in isolation, right? So continuing with the course on that day, in my mind should be allowed to continue because the student would not have been present that day.
Okay. And then there was another, question. Where do we send students who have concerns when they learn that there's a positive case in the face-to-face setting? Like, who do they go to for information?
This is Bill of the Counseling Center. Could I jump in real quick and answer this before I leave the meeting?
Please.
If you have people who have anxiety and stress, they're feeling upset about these kind of things, on the mental health side, send them to the Counseling Center. We'll be doing counseling with those students along the way. I would say if it's physical concerns, send them to student health and they can take care of it from that angle.
Thank you.
If the question was, I think the question was more about if rumors are spreading that there's positives and we can't really tell the student who's tested positive, I think to reminding students that public health will be in contact with them if they were a close contact and that, mm-hmm. If NDSU is aware that they're a close contact, we will make them aware. So I think reassuring them that we're not hiding, but we will, that public health will inform them if they are a close contact.
And Laura, if students kind of start organizing on their own within like their Blackboard course to talk about any of that information, is that something that should be encouraged, discouraged, especially if they start just like swapping health information? And I know one person mentioned there's a risk of gossip there.
Yeah. And I think it's also likely that students are going to report to faculty or staff. And if they do, I think, again, making sure that they've completed the online form is really important so that we can just verify, you know, if the rumor is true or not. I think discouraging that kind of talk is important. But also, if somebody is truly concerned, I think Dean of Students Office would be happy to visit with them. See if we can do a little investigating because, you know, there could be a case too where a rumor actually is, there's some truth. So we would do some investigating in that realm too. So you can feel free to refer people to the Dean of Students.
Okay.
Right?
If I could offer one other thought on this, let's remember that as they've done the contact tracing, they haven't been able to identify who a person picked up the illness from in all cases. In fact, there's a sizable percentage where it's unknown, and that refers to what is known as community spread, which means they may have picked it up just by being in an area that there was a transmission that occurred. And so I would encourage people to continue to do the things that we've done from the start on this. Maintain your hand sanitation, cover your cough, and maintain your distance, you know, your 6 foot distance, minimize to the extent possible your risk of exposure by doing those things, because it, you know, the potential does exist that even with if the changes that we're implementing, it's still a possibility that it can be anywhere.
But another question there's two questions that seem pretty related. So will staff working in public spaces be notified that they may have been exposed by students using the space? And then if there was a positive case in a classroom, will all instructors who use that classroom be notified? That's more related to the space than it is the people being connected to them.
What I can basically share from what the few that we've had to work through, what typically happens is we find out of a positive case a number of days after they were last in a space, and with the survivability of the virus, in many cases the risk of exposure isn't present anymore, so there isn't a lot of additional steps that we can take. I do know that I think Mike Ellingson in his session talked about some of the disinfecting steps that they're doing in addition to what they've historically done in trying to just, you know, address any of those community spread type issues.
Had another question about will the contact tracing include any contact they've had with other departments or employees? And will the tracing have similar guidelines within that department or office setting?
All of the contact tracing uses the closeness of contact, which is 6 foot for 15 minutes or more. I'm not sure if that answered the question or not, but it's a consistent process.
And that's done by the contact tracers through their interview process?
Yes.
Question, how often will testing be done once the initial tests are concluded?
That's still in discussion with the North Dakota University System Smart Restart Task Force. We've had the assistance of Vern Dosh, who's been overseeing contact tracing for the state since early on in this, that's providing assistance and guidance on arranging for that. Details are still being worked out.
We are at 1 o'clock. I don't know if you guys have any closing remarks you want to make before we...
Well, I guess I'd just like to offer that I appreciate everybody's attention and you know, joining us on this. As this thing progresses, as we've seen since the beginning, our approach needs to stay flexible as the situation changes. And come this fall, we'll be operating under that same principle, adjusting to the situation that presents itself on any given day. So thanks again for participating, and we'll continue to provide information. As I said, those websites will be up very shortly here in terms of providing additional guidance as well as some statistics of level of activity that we're seeing in the area.
I just want to say from a student affairs perspective that through Welcome Week and across the semester, we're going to be working very hard to educate students on the expectations, on the risks involved, on how to protect not only themselves, but each other and you. And so there's gonna be a big focus on why we're doing what we're doing and hopefully minimizing and mitigating the risk.
And then I would just suggest if you didn't get some questions answered, please feel free to email any one of us if you still would like us to dig into some things. Thank you.
Thank you all.